Blog Talk Radio.
Producer Susan Knowles. I'm so glad that you could be with me tonight and be on our radio show and listen to what's going on. If, as always, the chat room is open. You can ask questions there, or you can call in to ask our guest questions at 347-205-9620. As many of you know, I write a lot of articles, and I have a lot of past shows that you can listen to. And all of those are found at SusanKnowles.com. I hope you go there and take a look at those. As many also know that I'm a contributor for The Blaze and for Joe for America, and a lot of the same articles that I write appear on my website as well. You know, this has been just an incredible week. There's been a lot going on, and it's just getting started. It started over the weekend, as a matter of fact, and there's a lot to talk about tonight with everyone announcing their bid to become a presidential candidate. We're going to be talking about all of that and much more, but I first want to introduce you to my special guest tonight, Rodney Lee Conover. Let me tell you a little bit about Rodney. During a 25-year career in entertainment, Rodney Lee was a writer for The Rush Limbaugh Show, a conservative stand-up comic for 12 years. Working with the USO, he entertained people and troops all over the world. He also co-hosted talk radio for Sirius XM for 9 years. Along the way, he was on staff with Fox News, Sony Worldwide Network, and has been published in every medium, including print, television, and online. He also, and many of you may not know this about him, but he also ran for Congress in California's 8th District Don't know why he did that, but we'll certainly ask him. He's currently the host of the online radio show Conover U, as well as the producer of the TV comedy The Flip Side with Michael Loftus. Rodney Lee is a writer, producer, and senior editor at JoeForAmerica.com. So, Rodney, welcome to the show.
Hi, Susan. That is one impressive resume, I got to say. I was just listening to it going, who is this guy? Yeah, there's like, really only one thing. The only one thing can be gleaned from that is that I can't hold down a job.
I was going to say, you're probably sitting there thinking, I really need to meet this guy, right?
I'd like to meet him.
That's what I'm saying. And we really want to, you know, learn more about you. So I'm going to really dig in deep here and start going way back and uncover a lot of stuff, okay?
Go right ahead. I'm an open book.
Good, because that psychotherapist in me wants to learn more about you. So tell me, were you born and raised in California? Is that where you got your start?
No, I grew up in Chicago. And when I was 17, I left and I headed out to California. And I got as far as Missouri,
wow.
Not that far. And my broke down, and I had to get a job to fix my van, and I did. And then I headed out again for California, and I drove my Ford van, which was now fixed up, from Missouri, and I got as far as Phoenix, and I broke down again. So I had to
A message there?
I don't know. I think go buy a Chevy, I think, was the message. But I finally got to California after I went to a couple different colleges and went out there. And, you know, I've been there ever since. So it's been listen, when I got to California, all of my dreams were waiting for me. They really were. California is a wonderful place. And, gets a bad reputation, but let me tell you, 25 years ago, it was just magnificent, just a beautiful, awesome place where anybody, and I mean anybody, could just show up with the clothes on their back and you could accomplish anything, and I am testament to that. Now, since then, something's happened, but... It's still a great place. People get the wrong idea about California. It's just that there's a bunch of Maoist wannabes that took over control, politically speaking, of California, and they're insane. But the state is still great.
Now, you became an actor in California.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't call myself an actor. I dabbled in acting. I've, you know, had some acting jobs. I mostly, I was in the entertainment side of politics, mostly for about 25 years. My first job in showbiz was right in the Rush Limbaugh show. So that, you know, gives you a little bit of an idea where, you know, my career started out there. And, you know, I've, in 2000 and what was it, 2008, I can't remember anymore, I retired from showbiz and went into politics full time. And the great Herman Cain came calling. And so I worked on his campaign. And then after he quit, I worked for him a couple more years as a speechwriter. And I did a bunch of things for Mr. Cain, and speech writing was just one of them, but it was wild. That was a wild time in life.
Tell us a little bit. Let's back up just a second, and then I'll go forward back to Herman Cain. But tell us what that was like writing for Rush Limbaugh during that time.
Well, there was nothing else like Rush Limbaugh at the time. I mean, there was no Sean Hannity. There was no Fox News. There was no AM radio. There was no internet. There was not even email. The material I did for Rush went to him via fax machine on a manual, you know, regular typewriter. There was not even word processors. I mean, this is a long time ago. And I got my first computer while I was working for Rush, and that was I taught myself how to use a computer just out of necessity. And it was a wild time. It was the mid-90s when the Republicans took over Congress for the first time in 60-some-odd years or something like that, 1994, and the Newt Gingrich and took over the House of Representatives. It was really a historic time in life. And, of course, Bill Clinton was president, and we had the makings. When you put together the tax cuts that Ronald Reagan put into play, and then you take into account what happened in the 90s, really set up that whole big internet, big technology bubble 1.0, whatever you want to call it. It was just a nutty time in life. I think people look back on the 90s as a great time, and it was. I loved
right.
the 90s. I would do that again.
And what was, you know, you went on from there and you started working for Herman Cain. Tell me about what surrounded everything, you know, in his campaign and the things you learned from that and what you did for him.
Well, that was literally 20 years later. I went in 2011, 2012, started working for Herman Cain, speech writing, working on the grassroots, social media, the internet, just about everything you could think of, and it was great. I got to roll with the Secret Service and do all kinds of things I had never done.
And did you also work for Ann Coulter at a certain point? Right?
Not really. I mean, I know Ann. I've worked on a couple of her books and you know, helped her out here and there over the years, but it wasn't. I don't have a job. With Ann.
Mm-hmm.
She's just a friend of mine, and I've known her for 10 or 12 years. I met her on a show, actually, on Fox News. I was on staff on Fox News, I guess it was about 10 years ago now. It just I can't believe it's been that long, but I was on staff at Fox, and then we did a show called the Half Hour News Hour, which was the first really conservative comedy on a network ever. And
wow.
I got Ann on the first episode. It was Ann and Rush Limbaugh on the first episode. So that was very exciting.
That's a big deal. Right, that's a big deal. And then you were a stand-up comic for 12 years. Tell us about
yes.
what that was like.
Well, I loved it. I mean, if you talk to your average stand-up comic, they will do nothing but complain about stand-up comedy, being on the road, et cetera, et cetera. I loved it. I thought being on the road was the greatest thing on earth. I just can't tell you how much I enjoyed traveling around the country and around the world, making people laugh for a living. To me, that was the greatest thing. It was just awesome. I really,
wow.
really liked being a stand-up comic. But it's a young man's sport. It's not something
mm-hmm.
people should do too long. Because I think that's when you maybe get in trouble. Well, not in trouble. That's maybe where you get in a situation where you maybe don't enjoy it like you used to. It is a young man's sport. I mean, it's great
mm-hmm.
running around all over the place. And it's just it was just a wild time. What I liked most about it was going to small towns. I've really been in every small town in America.
Wow.
You know, clubs, and, you know, back in the late 80s and 90s, throughout the 90s, the comedy was just out of control. Stand-up comedy was just nuts. I mean, there was literally a place to do comedy everywhere. I've done gigs in bowling alleys and Denny's restaurants, you know, train depots, you name it. I mean, back of package liquor stores, strip clubs, and then, you know, the nightclub, the stand-up comedy nightclub scene, of course, exploded at the same time. There was thousands and thousands of clubs just sprung up everywhere. I mean, you couldn't swing a dead cat and not hit a comic standing in front of a brick wall, and that's what I did, and I really loved it.
Now, you also were a co-host on a radio show on Sirius XM.
I was. I worked at Sirius XM for close to 9 years, and I was a conservative counterpart to a liberal host, and it was mostly comedy, though. We didn't really do hardcore politics, but we did cover politics and pop culture every day, and that was lovely. That was a good time in my life as well, and it allowed me to do a lot of things. I got lucky, and after the year about 2004, I started getting really successful, and I was able to retire in about 2008 from show business, and like I said, go into politics full time and not have to worry about money. And I was able to go work for people and their campaigns. One of them, which was our buddy Joe the Plumber, Joe Wurzelbacher,
mm-hmm.
I worked on his campaign for Congress as well. And I was able to do a lot of things that people aren't normally able to do because, you know, normally you got to make a living. But I had
right.
I had retired from all of that, and I was very fortunate.
Now, how long or when did, let's say it this way, when did you first know that you were a conservative and you believed in the conservative values?
I really don't know. I think when I was growing up, I just thought that's what everybody was because I grew up in Aurora, Illinois, which is outside of Chicago. I didn't know anybody that wasn't like me. You know, it was just, it wasn't a political thing. I never thought of it in terms of, in terms of politics, I'm right-leaning or conservative or Republican. It never occurred to me. I just was what I was, and most people, at least people that I knew, was a very simple belief in God and country. I mean, it was just that simple.
Right.
I mean, I know that sounds cliche, but it's not. It was just, you know, the way I grew up in a cornfield. And that's what we were taught, and that was what worked the best. And really, that's what conservatism is. When you think about it, it's just the history of what works. And I've written about this extensively, that conservatives use, over the thousands of years, conservatives use trial and error to figure out what works, what's best. Not in the short run, but what's best in the long run. What works? And that's the history
mm-hmm.
of conservatism. Now, conversely,
right.
liberalism is what works now, what works right now.
Mm-hmm.
Without regard to the future. It's almost like if your kid, you know, whines to you that they want candy, well, if you give them candy, that works, shuts them up. And that's liberals. They're bad parents. They're like bad parents. That works now. You give them candy,
right.
it works right now. But guess what? In the long run, it's bad for the kids, it's bad for you, it's bad for everybody. And that's really the difference between, to me, conservatism and liberalism, is that conservatism is for the long haul, and liberalism is for right now. I think liberals are tantamount to spoiled children that just want something right now for nothing. And they want
mm-hmm.
to be liked. More than anything, they want to be liked. And you know, if you have kids or you have grandkids or whatever, you know that part of parenting is that your kids don't like you sometimes. In fact, they
right.
hate you sometimes. But you know you're doing it for their well-being. And sure enough, a matter of maybe days, months, or even years, the kid will come around and understand that was for their own good and for the betterment of the entire family, maybe the community, and maybe society as a whole. But liberalism says, no, what's good right now? I'll give you an example, Susan, if you don't mind me
mm-hmm. sure.
gabbing on.
That's why
take
you're here.
Take a guy, for instance, take a guy that's standing on an on-ramp with a sign, we'll work for food. In other words, give me money.
Right.
Now, there's a couple of – there's any number of ways you can react to that guy, and most people, you know, pretend they don't see him, and that's the main people, mostly the reaction. A liberal's reaction, it would be to give them money or
right.
probably to give them your money, but let's just keep it simple and say give them money. When you give money to a person begging, there is only one person that benefits from that act, not the person that you're giving the money to. You're the only person that benefits from that act, from that action, because you feel good about yourself for a little while. And you may feel
right.
good about yourself for a long while. You may strut around and say, look at me. I'm a good person because I did this. But you know what? That really hurts the person you're giving the money to. It doesn't help them a bit. It doesn't help them in the short run or the long run. You're paying them to stay poor. You are keeping them right where they are. You are, in fact, teaching them how to be poor. Hey, just stand there. You'll get a little money, and then the next day you go back. I invented a saying a number of years ago, and that is, it used to be people would work their way out of the ghetto. That's how they'd get out. They'd work their way out.
Right.
Now, the only people still in the ghetto are the ones being paid to stay there. And that's another big difference between liberalism and conservatism. Of course, liberals can run out and go, oh, you hate poor people. You want to see old folks die and you don't give a damn about the poor. Well, that's not true, because I will make you a case, Susan, where giving money to the poor hurts them in the short run, hurts them in the long run, doesn't do them a damn bit of good, and in fact, does them a disservice, and society as a whole, tears the whole thing down. So it's an emotional appeal. That's what Democrats have. They have an emotional appeal. Vote for me, and I will give you that other guy's stuff. That is the modern liberal. That's the contemporary Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton model. It's relatively new, in that it's not subtle anymore.
Right.
It is. When Barack Obama ran for re-election in 2012, his campaign was this: see that guy? He's got more stuff than you. Vote for me. I'll give you some of his stuff.
Right.
He's a bad. And not only that, he's a bad person. So.
Well, and it's also with progressives too. It's that everybody is a victim. Everybody should be pitied because they're not able to help themselves, even if they are able to help themselves or can be taught to help themselves. Let's just pity them, treat them as though they have to depend on us because they can't. They're not, you know, smart enough, intelligent enough to do better. And that really, to me, looks at a person in the wrong way and humiliates a person rather than encourage them or build them up.
Imagine the white liberals' message to black Americans. Just consider the white liberals' message to black Americans for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
It goes like this. Hey, black people, you cannot get ahead. You cannot be equal. You cannot succeed without my help. Without the white
yep.
liberals' help, you cannot do it. I mean, that's an incredible, incredible thing to think. Even just for somebody to think that is incredible. And it's sad.
Right.
And it's racist. And it is repulsive, and the idea that that would help somebody is insane. That it really is insane.
It is. I grew up in the South, and I saw that, you know, a lot during my time in the South, and it was really sad because you never saw people getting ahead. You always saw people being held back, and you knew that they had the ability to do what they needed to do if only they were given the chance. But they were never given the chance because from day one they were just always told, you can't do it, you can't do it. We'll help you. We'll do it for you. And it's the wrong message to send to anybody. There's nothing there that's empowering or encouraging to anyone. And it is a very sad thing to do to any group of people or to any individual.
Ironically, the group that did the best under the 8 years of Ronald Reagan is black males.
Mm-hmm.
And the group who is doing the worst under 6 years of Obama is black males. I find that to
right.
be illustrative, ironic,
yes.
and sadly we don't have a mainstream media that will point that out because it is true.
Right.
I mean, it's the numbers don't lie. You ask anyone in the, you ask your average mainstream media type, how did the poor do under Reagan? They'll say, well, it's terrible. Only the rich did well. Well, that's a big, fat lie.
Yep.
It really is. It's
Absolutely.
Just a, it's a tremendous piece of propaganda that's, that has been able to take hold in this country. I don't know how it does that. I don't know how people are talked into that. I'm not suggesting that people are stupid. I'm just saying I don't know how they get talked into something like that when a tiny bit, just a tertiary piece of research will tell you that it's just the opposite. It's almost, it's Goebbels-like in its approach because they say it's not subtle. It's exactly the opposite of what is, what has actually happened. They take the opposite and they scream it long and loud enough, and yeah, eventually it takes hold. You know, I used to think that the, in the late 80s, I thought the news was the news, Susan. I just thought you turned the news on, and that was the news. And,
right.
and I didn't think anything else of it. I didn't think any further. I didn't think, well, I wonder if this news people have our best interests in mind. I wonder if they're telling me the truth. I wonder. I never had any of those thoughts. I just thought the news was the news, and they're just telling you what's going on.
Just giving
and
you
then,
the facts.
Yeah, and then something really strange and really kind of unique happened to me. I had moved to California, and I got my first job in California, and I'm not big into holidays. Like, I don't really celebrate holidays just because my life is a holiday, and I feel guilty. I think holidays are for other people. Every single day, my life is a tremendous, tremendous holiday. So the actual holidays, I kind of give to, you know, I kind of let everybody else do that. And it goes the same way with vacations. I really don't take vacations because my life is a vacation. It really is. I'm just really a lucky person.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the same back then. I got this job, and they told me you need to, you know, you get 2 weeks off. Well, I was a salesman. I didn't want 2 weeks off because I got paid by how much I worked,
right.
not by how much I took. Why would I take 2 weeks off? That means I wouldn't get paid.
Right.
So I said, well, I didn't want to take 2 weeks. I keep working. And then it was a union company, and they said, well, you have to take 2 weeks off. It's you don't get a choice. So I had to take 2 weeks off. And you know what I did? This will give you more insight into me than anything you could ask me. What I did on my two-week vacation, I watched the Iran-Contra hearings.
Wow.
Yeah. That's some life I'm having, right? But I watched them one day, and I live in Manhattan Beach, and the only channel we could get was CBS. We didn't have cable, and we couldn't, you know, we were down there near the water, and we could only really get one channel. So I watched the Iran-Contra hearings, and then afterwards, the news came on. And I'm telling you, it changed my life. It changed my life 1,000%, because the first night, I just watched with my jaw open. And I thought, something really weird is going on here. I'm going to have to, now I got to watch tomorrow. And I became fascinated with the Iran-Contra hearings because I'd watch them, and then I would watch the way CBS would report on them. And I am telling you, Susan, every single night was a big, fat lie. And I was just, and I'd call people up and tell them, you're not going to believe it. But CBS, I don't know about the other ones, but CBS is lying to everybody. They're not just stretching the truth. They're not just, you know, leaning a certain way. And I wasn't splitting them up into liberal and conservative. I was just watching. And I thought, wow, that didn't happen. I just got done watching those hearings myself. That didn't happen. That shit, they didn't say that. They said this. You know, it was just a big piece of, you know, horrible propaganda,
right.
you know, led by Dan Rather. And I just, it changed my life, Susan. It just made me go, wow, the news isn't the news.
Well, you got a big wake-up call. And, you know, for a lot of people, they're so busy and they're just, you know, rushing from this job over here to take care of the kids, to go to this game, to you know, on and on and on, and nobody has time to stop. And then, you know, if they did, if they could just slow it down just a little bit and compare what they're seeing and what the media is reporting, I think a lot of people would soon realize that this has been going on for a very, very long period of time, and we're not getting the truth anymore. And that's why, you know, people who like myself and you and others, you know, outside of the mainstream media, we're trying to give the truth to people because they deserve the truth, and we're trying to get it out there so that they can wake up and see that they're not getting the truth all the time. Go ahead. You sound like you have a...
Well, a couple years later, after the Iran-Contra hearings, I was on a mission. I wanted to meet Oliver North because I just thought he was the coolest guy. And a couple of years later, my girlfriend came home and she said, "Rodney, I heard something this morning that you have to hear. You have to hear this radio show." And I didn't listen to the radio. I was not a radio person. And I said, "Well, whatever." And she said, no, "You have to listen to this show. There's a guy that talks just like you do on the radio." And I said, "Well, all right." Well, it was the Rush Limbaugh show.
Wow.
And I finally, a couple, three, 4 days later, she got me in the car and turned it on. And I was like, "Oh, my God, there's a guy that talks just like I do on the radio." And I literally faxed him some material a couple of days later, and it was off to the races. I started working for him. It was just a really strange introduction into the world of, I wouldn't say politics, I would say the entertainment of politics.
Right.
So that was kind of a long answer to the original question you asked me. How did I get into it in the first place? It was through the Iran-Contra hearings. It was being forced to take a union vacation. And Oliver North and Rush Limbaugh, and that's the way that went.
Now, a minute ago when you were talking about your stand-up comedian, I had a listener ask, were you ever on Saturday Night Live?
No, I was never. I was never famous. I was never successful on that level. I never even auditioned for Saturday Night Live. That was quite a few clicks up. The success ladder when it comes to stand-up comedy. I was never going to be successful in stand-up comedy on that level because I didn't want to be. I mean, I should. That sounded bad. I was not talented enough to be that, you know, that successful, and I didn't want to anyway. I mean, I traveled with guys that were 20 years older than me, and I didn't want to be them. I did not want to be an old stand-up comic. And stand-up comedy, for me, was a means to an end, and it was always something that was going to get me into television, that was going to get me into movies, it was going to get me... stand-up comedy opened the door to everything. I mean, I got in the USO, somebody saw me on stage in Indianapolis and hired me to produce a massive, the biggest radio show in the world, which was Power 106 in Los Angeles, and the morning show. I went from doing nothing, literally, making $300 a week doing stand-up comedy. I went from there to writing and producing, and being on air, the biggest radio show in the world. So stand-up comedy did.
Nice.
Everything that I got in life came from stand-up comedy.
Stand-up comedy. Now, tell us about your particular show now that you're working on. And what.
The Flip Side. The Flip Side is a great show. It's a syndicated show, so if you want to watch it, you have to check your local listings, as they say, because every city it's on on a different channel, and I don't have them all memorized. We're on in over half of the country, and if you go to theflipsideshow.com, you can click on a little button that says Station Finder and then put your zip code in, and it will tell you when it's on, what night, what time, what channel in your local market. So that's the little commercial for The Flip Side. The Flip Side is a conservative-leaning comedy show, and it stars a guy named Michael Loftus. Michael is a terrific entertainer, and he's really funny. And we do news, we do politics, we do pop culture, we goof around, we do skits, we do just about everything. And it's, the Washington Times said that we were the antidote to the Jon Stewart Show, the Daily Show. So that's how I articulate it.
Well, I've watched the show. I love the show. And last year we did have Michael Loftus on Stanford Truth Radio.
Oh.
And he's amazing. He's just great. And you are too. I've seen your skits on the show. The two of you together are just hilarious. So I hope people will watch that show, because I think that they will see a quality show that they haven't seen in a long time, and with a conservative slant to it, which is absolutely needed. I don't know of any other comedy show that has that conservative slant, just like, you know, you were talking about in the Washington Times and all. And it's something that's really needed, and it's a great show. So please go out and find watch it. I know, yeah, for me it's on XETV, I believe that's who the channel is, but, you know, who knows? It could be on anything. So
you can watch it on Dish TV if you have the Dish, and we are coming down the pike. We are literally weeks away from signing a deal with DirecTV, so pretty soon DirecTV as well. That'll be great. And we just wrapped up season one. Season two on the way.
Nice. Well, now that's going to be, it's already successful, and it's just going to really take off even more as you get more and more stations and networks to pick it up, because it's hilarious.
Right.
And
We just got Atlanta. The last couple of seasons were Atlanta and Houston, which are huge markets, and so we're very, very excited about that. And the DirecTV thing will be huge. If they will ever sign that stupid contract, it'll be on the way.
Well, and for those that want to hear that past show with Michael Loftus, just go to SusanKnowles.com, and you can pick up the archive on that and listen to it. It was a great show, so please do that. And as I said at the beginning, you are you're associated with Joe for America, and you are the editor that edits my articles that I send to you before they're posted. And I have to put mine out today.
Yeah, I have to correct all your spelling mishaps and your terrible grammar.
Yeah, I know. Lawyers are that way. I'm not a practicing lawyer, so I guess I've slipped, right? but tell us, I know that Joe for America has something now that's called Team Joe. What's that all about?
Team Joe. I'm glad you brought that up. Joe for America, www.joeforamerica.com, is a news and media site, and we really do cover the stories that you just won't see, period. I mean, and Susan, you're a great contributor for our site, and, you know, when you post something, it's just not something you're going to see in the mainstream news. You know, we grab these stories that we think people are going to dig, and so far they have. We've been going for about 3 years now, and Team Joe is something that grew out of JoeForAmerica.com. We were sitting around and we were trying to think, you know, how could we be more active how could we be more of an activist group, not just beyond what we were doing on the internet and beyond personal appearances and, you know, everything that we were doing. How can we be more activist in terms of getting stuff done? We're trying to figure that out. And we came up with this thing, Team Joe. And what it is because, see, people get barraged with people and their causes and their candidates and this and that. And it always involves, it seems to me, that it always involves people asking you for money. Now, there's always like an ask at the end, be it a candidate or a cause or just, you know, you're giving money to some group, you have no idea who they are. And we didn't want to do that. We wanted to just have a huge army of people and not ask anybody for money. but just ask people for their time and their effort. And that's what we did. And we put Team Joe together, and it gathers on the internet. You can find it through the Joe the Plumber Facebook. You can find it through, you know, joeforamerica.com, and you can sign up to be a member of Team Joe. And we just got started, and I think we have over 1,000 people in the Team Joe army now, which is just beyond belief. In fact,
wow,
we got too many people. We didn't really know what to do. We had so many. And so our buddy Scott Osborne came up with the idea of, well, why don't we run it like why don't we run Team Joe just like a political campaign? But the candidate, instead of it being a person, will be a cause. You know, every week we'll have a new cause, or every month, you know, however long it takes. And we take this cause and we actually try to solve it. In other words, if there's, let's say there's a somebody in the state of Louisiana that's trying to introduce some legislation that would, you know, be bad for people's rights or gun laws or, or, you know, whatever it is, we attack until we, you know, right that wrong. We get Team Joe on it. And Scott suggested that we do it like a candidate. In other words, we have state leaders, and that's how we can handle the immense amount of people that want to be on Team Joe. So that's what we're doing now. We're getting people that, because everybody has a certain amount of time and effort. You know, I mean, you can't be like,
right,
Susan and Rodney, where we sit around all day doing this stuff. Most people gotta make a living. So sometimes people have an hour a day, sometimes people have 5 hours a day, and we're getting people that have an opportunity to have a bigger commitment and kind of trickle down people, you know, like I said, like team leaders, like state leaders. I'm not sure exactly what we're calling it, but it's awesome because now we, instead of just writing, instead of just Susan Knowles putting a blog out, you know, which is great, you know, I do the same thing myself, now we can take a specific issue, and sometimes it comes out of a story, sometimes it comes out of legislation, you know, whatever. We take that specific thing and we go, oh, my God, look at this. This is terrible. This is terrible this is unconstitutional, or, wow, this is going to be bad for kids, or whatever it is. And Team Joe just takes it, and everybody just goes crazy with the story and the information. And maybe we, you know, have the name of somebody on a school board or a principal, that, you know, whatever. And they just get barraged with calls and emails and letters, and people go nuts. And that's what Team Joe is. It's an online social media activist group. Isn't that cool?
Right. That is very cool, because it's better than just sitting back and doing nothing. Like you're saying,
yeah,
now you're looking for solutions.
And
how do we resolve
this?
Yeah,
nobody ever asks anybody for money. You know, we don't go to Team Joe, okay, everybody needs to put in $10. Now, we just take our time and our effort and our skills and our everybody's particular abilities, and we just go nuts. And we, like I said, we're getting things done.
Now, are you and Joe involved in a show together?
We are not yet. Joe and I have a couple of TV pilots that we're doing, but they're not sold to series yet. They're still in the beginning stages. People, you know, there's a million ways to do television. There just is, and the one way that people are familiar with is to make a television pilot. In other words, it's basically one episode. And then you take that one episode, and then you try to get people interested, or get, you know, cable outlets or network outlets or syndication deals to make it into a series. You know, it might be once a week, it might be every day. And Joe and I are involved in two pilots. But no, we don't have any shows up and running just yet, me and Joe. But we do some funny things once in a while on video, and people. I don't know if you saw this series of commercials that we did. We did a parody of the, remember those Mac versus PC commercials? Hi, I'm a Mac.
Right.
Oh, I'm a PC. We did a. You can go on Joe for America and see these. But Joe and I did a series of those, but they were liberal versus conservative, and I played the liberal. And I'd come out and say, "Hi, I'm a liberal," and Joe would be like, "I'm a conservative," and then we just did a parody of the Mac PC commercials, and they're really funny.
I've seen those, so people should go and look at those. They are funny. Tell me about your Glenn Beck story.
Oh, boy, Glenn Beck story. Well, I got to have a disclaimer, and that is if people get the feeling that I dislike Glenn Beck, please don't. What it comes from is jealousy, in that many years ago, Glenn Beck beat me out of a really good job, and I just really I took it out on him, and I shouldn't have, because you just say, you know, you don't get every job. Also, Glenn, I used to think Glenn Beck was crazy. I thought he was a lunatic. I really did. And a lot of people thought, a lot of people thought Glenn Beck was too extreme. You know, people, conservatives even thought that. And this was about, I'd say, 5 or 6 years ago. Glenn Beck would say things, and you just shake your head. You go, God, you know, you're not doing the conservative cause any good. You're a lunatic. Well, guess what? He was right. I was absolutely wrong, and he was right. Glenn Beck nailed it years ago. I mean, I say things now that Glenn Beck was saying 5 years ago. He was way ahead of everybody, and I give him his props. But my story, my Glenn Beck story, is one that led me to dislike Glenn Beck vehemently, not because he's a bad person, but because he beat me out of this job. And so it was just pure jealousy. When I was a young man, when was this? This is probably over 10 years ago. CNN was just starting to get their butts handed to them. By Fox News, and they were just getting killed. Fox News was just wiping the floor with them. And so they came up with this brilliant idea, CNN did, they had a sister channel called CNN Headline. Well, they still do. But you know that they have CNN, and then they have CNN Headline. What they did was they were going to compete with Fox News, but they were going to do so with CNN Headline. So they commissioned about a dozen pilots. Again, these TV pilots are, you know, like a one-episode sample of what your show is going to be. And I made one of them, and actually two of them. But one of them was good. One was bad, one was good. One was worthy. And I think it was called Content. I can't really remember the name of that. But anyway, they narrowed down 12 of these pilots to two of them. Two pilots. Now, let me tell you, Susan, if you get a daily show on CNN or CNN Headline or Fox News, it's a big deal. I mean, people work their whole lives to get that and never even get close. It's just a really, really big deal, not to mention mega lucrative. I mean, you just get rich in a minute. You know, if I didn't mention that, I'd be a liar, because I mean, that's people get into the entertainment business because of the money. I pity them, but they do. Anyway, CNN headline through CNN, and may I tell you this, Susan? CNN is a wonderful company to work for. regardless of what you think of them as an organization, you ever go to work for these guys? And you will find yourself a happy, happy person. And I was making this pilot, and I was like, wow, this is the greatest company ever. Man, they put you up in this awesome hotel in Times Square and, you know, open bar tabs. And it was just a wild time of my life. Anyway, made this pilot. They narrowed it down to two pilots. They eliminate 10 of them. And there's only two left. So you're like, wow, I got a 50-50 chance of having a daily show on CNN. And, you know, it's too good to be true. You know what I mean?
Right.
And lo and behold, you can guess the ending of this. They picked the other pilot. And that pilot was Splenda.
Yep.
So,
wow.
I immediately hated. Yeah, I immediately hated Glenn Beck with every fiber of my. I didn't even know who he was. I'd never heard of him before. I knew, you know, from other people said, oh, he's got a radio show. I didn't know anything about Glenn Beck. All I knew was I hated him. But they put Glenn Beck literally in a glass cage at CNN headline, and it was just so strange to go over there because I knew a couple of people work on the show to see how they had isolated this crazy conservative. Of course, he had the highest ratings in CNN history.
Right.
I mean, so it really must have burned them to have to, you know. Anyway, he got sick of it and went over to Fox News, the rest is history. Then, of course, he broke off from there and started his thing in Dallas, which is where the flip side. We make our little flip side TV show as well in Dallas.
Nice. Well, we have about 9 minutes left, so I want to quickly talk about. Yeah, time just flies, I'm telling you.
Other day when we were talking about this, did I tell you that I'm just going to gab and it'll be over? I'm so sorry.
But that's fine. No, you've answered every question I've
asked.
Don't
you have any callers? Don't they want to people ask questions?
They're afraid to call, you know. they're afraid of what you might say to them, I guess.
Well, I don't blame them.
No, but I wanted to say one word to you and get your opinion on it, okay?
Yeah.
Here goes.
Hillary is a – well, let me start over. We woke up when did she make her announcement? Yesterday, the day before?
Sunday.
America woke up on Sunday and found out that, in fact, we're not a bunch of racists. We're a bunch of sexists. And in one announcement, the entire independent-thinking America went from being a bunch of racists to a bunch of sexists. That's number one. Number two, we learned that a true feminist clings to the coattails of her husband, does whatever comes her way, gets, you know, follows him no matter what he does. In fact, he can humiliate you and your young daughter in public. That's okay. Follow him because that's the way to get your goals. That's what we learned about true feminism, is the way to get your goals is you follow some cheating, lying, scumbag redneck. That's how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the second thing we found out. Now, the third thing we found out is that the thing we're going to find out is Hillary is one angry dudette, and she is going to take it out on the rest of us. So be careful what you wish for, ladies. That is a bad feminist.
Well, we also found out a couple other things. We found out, one, that everyday Americans, that, you know, we're everyday Americans, for one. And number two, that we need a champion. I didn't realize that the government, that I turned to the government to look for a champion. You know, silly me, I always thought it was, you know, my parents, people in my life and my personal inner circle that, you know, that I trusted and brought in. I didn't realize it was, you know, that it was Hillary I needed and that I, in fact, needed a champion. And I was so disgusted by all that. I wrote an article about that I don't know if you posted it today, but it'll be out on Joe for America tomorrow, at least, I think, or at my website at SusanKnowles.com about my thoughts about her saying that, you know, we need a champion. I did like her presser, though, that said Hillary has fought children and families her entire life.
what a faux pas. My God. And then her website didn't work. Her YouTube channel didn't work. My God, it's a disaster.
Well, I mean, it's kind of like Obamacare. I mean, do you really think, it's the third term of Obama she gets in. So it's like Obamacare. Why should anything work? I mean, you'd be surprised if it did, you know. So
that worked worse than her marriage.
And what do you think about, you know, just briefly, we've got about 5 minutes left, Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, Marco Rubio. Kind of what are your thoughts about those three?
Well, if you throw Scott Walker in there, we can have four. And I'll say this.
Mm-hmm.
They're all very acceptable to me. What I would like, not just acceptable, they're exemplary. What I'd like to say to your audience is this. We got to stop waiting around for the perfect candidate because it doesn't exist. Everybody has some shared core values, I hope, okay? And then within that, there are some subtleties. And in fact, there are some, you know, each candidate might have an issue or two that doesn't line up with you perfectly. Look, that's the way it is. Stop. Let's stop looking for the perfect candidate. And am I suggesting that we sell out our core beliefs? Of course not. But let's not take one little thing and go, oh, well, you know, that's not my guy. My guy's this. And if my guy doesn't win the nomination, I'm taking my ball and bat and going home. We can't do that because you're going to end up with Hillary as president if you do that. Look,
right.
Mitt Romney is not president for one reason, not because he ran a bad campaign, not because he was fuzzy on health care, not because of this, not because, you know, all that is a bunch of bull. The reason Mitt Romney is not president is because 4 million conservatives that voted in the election prior to that stayed home, didn't vote.
Right.
Why? Well, because, well, he's not, he's a Romneycare. Oh, he's a Mormon. Oh, this, that, that, that. Everybody's got this little or maybe even a big reason for not voting. Well, guess what? Now you got Barack Obama. You happy? You shouldn't be. Okay? You should not be happy. You should have voted. Now listen, if Jeb Bush is the nominee, I'm voting for him. I don't want him to be the nominee. I don't want Chris Christie to be the nominee. I don't want, you know, there's many people I don't want as the nominee. But if they end up being the nominee, guess what? I'm not going to stay home.
Right.
And I would highly recommend that you go, that you support your guy or your woman, your as hard as you can and fight for them. But you know what? It's like a football game. Once the coach calls the play, that's it. That's the play we're running. Get in the game and try to win the game with the call that the coach played. Don't go into the huddle and go, well, I don't think we should have called that play, so I'm not going to try hard. No, that's not how you win. So, folks, let's coalesce around. And again, any one of those four is fine. I know people got a problem with Rubio because of the amnesty thing. Okay. I get it. But he's still preferable to Hillary, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. And for God's sakes, let's quit arguing over whether Ted Cruz is eligible to be president. We've got to stop with the, you know, this type of
his
thing.
His brother was born in the United States. Okay, so
it's over. Just stop.
Yeah.
And we have to stop. Say and just sort of like accepting things. We, you know, like, oh well, I think no matter what we do, Jeb's going to be the nominee. You know, get out there now, get out and support your candidate so that won't happen and you won't be in that position.
Right.
We can't wait until the very end like that. But,
you know there's only one, you know, Ted Cruz was born in Canada, and there's only one country besides the United States that you can be born in and still be, you know, still be president, and that's Kenya. So everybody knows that. So let's just drop the whole
just drop it and move on. Well, Rodney, I want to say thank you so much for being here with us tonight. It has been a blast. I hope that we can get you back on as things progress.
Anytime.
The different
can you
shows
tell
doing.
That I like to talk about myself?
And that's good. It's a talk show, so that works really well. So anyway, thank you so much for joining us, and take care.
Okay. Bye, Susan. Thanks.
Bye-bye. You're welcome. All right, everybody, thank you so much for being here tonight. I'm so glad that we got an opportunity to talk to Rodney. He certainly is a great guy, very interesting in his life, as you just heard. Go to joeforamerica.com. You can see all the things that he has there and things that he's working on and things that we're doing and articles we're writing. Get the word out about the conservative movement. We really need everybody's help. So until next week, again, thanks so much for being here. Have a great week, and God bless you. Stay safe.